to Ecclesiastes chapter 2 and starting at verse 17. Ecclesiastes chapter 2, verse 17. And we're going to read to the end of the chapter. So I came to hate life because everything done here under the sun is so troubling. Everything is meaningless, like chasing the wind. I came to hate all my hard work because here on earth, for I must leave to others everything I have earned. And who can tell whether my successors will be wise or foolish? Yet they will control everything I've gained by my skill and hard work under the sun. How meaningless. So I gave up in despair, questioning the value of my hard work in this world. Some people work wisely with knowledge and skill, then must leave the fruit of their efforts to somebody who hasn't worked for it. This too is meaningless, a great tragedy. So what do people get in this life for all their hard work and anxiety? Their days of labor are filled with pain and grief. Even at night, their minds cannot rest. It is all meaningless. So I decided there's nothing better than to enjoy food or drink and to find satisfaction in work. Then I realized that all these pleasures are from the hand of God. For who can enjoy, who can eat or enjoy anything apart from Him? God gives wisdom, knowledge, and joy to those who please Him. But if a sinner becomes wealthy, God takes the wealth away and gives it to those who please Him. This too is meaningless, like chasing the wind.
So, as Jeff has said, it's quite an unusual passage, maybe not what we were expecting. But before we get into it, I was going to ask the like the children or people, if you can think back to when you were young, what job did you really want to do when you were young, or if you are young now? Anyone like to say?
Banker.
A banker. Excellent choice if you want to be. A brain surgeon. Very useful. A vet. Very good. Yeah, those books by James Herriot. Really, really great books. Yes. Postman. Makes you fit and you get to see the area. Fantastic. So, I don't think anyone said astronaut or even scientist. So what we're going to do, I'm showing a picture of somebody here. Can anybody tell me who this person is? And the big clue is they're an astronaut. Well done, sir. Well done. Yes. In fact, most people don't know this is Michael Collins. He was an Italian-born American astronaut, and he flew the Apollo 11 command module around the moon in 1969, while his crewmates, you probably heard of these people, Neil Armstrong and Buzz Aldrin, they went down and made the first landing on the surface of the moon. But Michael Collins, he travelled 250,000 miles to get to the moon, but then he had to wait outside in the car. And what did he get for such an act of selflessness? He is occasionally remembered by a few people as the man who did not land on the moon. Okay, and the next person is even harder to guess. So, anybody know who this person is? A very difficult one. Well, this is Rosalind Franklin, and she was a brilliant chemist working in the field of X-ray diffraction photography. And in Cambridge, at the same time, in the Cavendish Lab in Cambridge, Francis Crick and James Watson, they were working on a theoretical model of DNA. But in 1953, they gleaned crucial insights about DNA structure from one of Rosalind Franklin's photographs and from a summary of her unpublished work. But Watson and Crick never told Franklin they'd seen her materials. And then when they published their incredible paper in the Nature Journal that April, she was barely mentioned. So Crick, Watson, and even the assistant lab chief, Morris Wilkins, they all shared a 1962 Nobel Prize for their work on the structure of DNA whereas Franklin got no acclaim at all. For these are just two examples of people who have achieved incredible things, and yet just a few generations later, they are almost completely forgotten. So, this is somewhat in line with what the book of Ecclesiastes, what Solomon has been saying. And I'm going to summarize where the book has taken us so far. So the teacher, who many people believe is Solomon, he was seeking the meaning and true purpose of life when viewed from a godless perspective. So every time it says under the sun in Ecclesiastes, that means life without God, a godless perspective. Now, Solomon has investigated wisdom and knowledge, and for completeness, he even included madness and folly. He tested himself with pleasure and fine wine. He made great works. He acquired incredible wealth, but he was still never truly satisfied. And what's more, he realizes that the wise man and the complete fool share the same end, namely death. And there is no more remembrance of the wise man than of the fool. And that brings us to today's passage. And I've divided the passage into two sections. So the first section, verses 17 to 23, we're looking at life without God. And then mercifully, from verses 24 to 26, God comes into the picture. So just to recap, it's well worth following through in your Bibles as we go through. Verse 17, the writer says, "So I hated life because the work that is done under the sun was grievous to me. All of it is meaningless, a chasing after the wind." So the teacher has reflected back on all his previous writing, and he's concluded that everything that is done without God, that is under the sun, is meaningless. And then he goes on to say that not only does wealth never truly satisfy, but you have to leave it to someone else. And who knows whether that person will be wise or foolish. So verses 18 and 19, we read, "I hated all the things I had toiled for under the sun, because I must leave them to the one who comes after me. And who knows whether that person will be wise or foolish? Yet they will have control over all the fruit of my toil, into which I have poured my effort and my skill under the sun. This too is meaningless." Now, many years ago, I remember there was a trend, and people used to wear T-shirts that said, "He who dies with the most toys wins." And that's a ridiculous statement, but it did reflect the sort of philosophy of the time. But then somebody else came along a lot wiser, and they produced T-shirts, "He who dies with the most toys still dies." And that is much more in line with the passage we're reading this morning. But also, maybe the passage was looking ahead to verse 19, when verse 19 was looking ahead to Solomon's son, Rehoboam, because Rehoboam, the only son of Solomon, was instrumental in causing the nation of Israel to divide into two. And we can read about this in 1 Kings 12, verses 13 to 17. So, we read that the king, this is King Solomon, answered the people harshly, rejecting the advice given him by the elders. He followed the advice of the young men and said, "My father made your yoke heavy, I will make it even heavier. My father scourged you with whips, I will scourge you with scorpions." So the king did not listen to the people, for this turn of events was from the Lord to fulfill the word the Lord had spoken to Jeroboam, son of Nebat, through Ahijah the Shilonite. When all Israel saw that the king refused to listen to them, they answered the king, "What share do we have in David? What part in Jesse's son? To your tents, Israel. Look after your own house, David." So the Israelites went home. But as for the Israelites who were living in the towns of Judah, Rehoboam still ruled over them. So, now, many years ago, I was lucky enough to go on holiday in China, and as part of that holiday, we visited a tofu museum. And this was a family business that had been built up from scratch and built up and handed on to the next generation and the next generation. And then they say in China, family businesses usually last about three generations before somebody comes along. They don't have the skill or the motivation to keep the business going. They end up squandering all the efforts of the previous generations, and the business goes bankrupt. Well, this tofu business we visited, it had lasted five generations, but in the end, eventually, like all others, it failed, and it was turned into a museum. Well, we see from this passage here that we didn't have to wait five or even three generations after the death of Solomon, because the rot was going to set in immediately with his son, Rehoboam. So picking up Ecclesiastes again, reading from verse 20, we read verse 20, "My heart began to despair over all my toilsome labor under the sun. For a person may labor with wisdom, knowledge, and skill, and then they must leave all they own to another who has not toiled for it. This too is meaningless and a great misfortune. What do people get for all the toil and anxious striving with which they labor under the sun? All their days their work is grief and pain. Even at night their minds do not rest. This too is meaningless." So we see that life under the sun, that is life without God, has very little to offer. Such a sorry way to end this part of the book. In conclusion, the teacher highlights the impossibility of finding true satisfaction and meaning in a godless world under the sun. He has tried every worldly thing, acquiring wisdom and knowledge, having pleasure and laughter, and building great works and wealth, but none of these truly satisfy. But mercifully, the second part of our passage brings God into the picture. So let's read verses 24 and 25. "A person can do nothing better than to eat and drink and find satisfaction in their own toil. This too I see is from the hand of God. For without him, who can eat or find enjoyment?" Now this is an incredible contrast, because compared to the teacher's lavish feasts, his fine wine, just a simple meal with thankfulness to God is worth so much more. And if you want your work to be worthwhile, do it with sincerity of heart and reverence for the Lord. Because we read in Colossians 3, verses 22 to 24, here Paul is writing to slaves, and he writes, "Slaves, obey your earthly masters in everything, and do it, not only when their eye is on you and to curry their favour, but with sincerity of heart and reverence for the Lord. Whatever you do, work at it with all your heart, as if working for the Lord, not for human masters, since you know that you will receive an inheritance from the Lord as a reward. It is the Lord Christ you are serving." Now, this is an incredible passage, really. It's incredible that by working for the Lord, whatever you do, it makes such a huge difference. And we're not talking about flying the Apollo command module round the moon or photographing the structure of DNA. This passage was written to slaves. So what sort of tasks do you think slaves would have to do? Foot washing. Pretty grim, yes. cleaning, yes. Labouring in the blazing sun in the fields.
Construction.
Really tough, menial jobs. But if you do them with sincerity of heart and reverence for the Lord, they actually count for eternity. It's remarkable, the truth. It's an incredible contrast. Life without God, you may achieve these amazing things, but a few generations later, you're forgotten. Whereas menial tasks done by slaves, if you do them with reverence for God, they become, you receive an inheritance from the Lord as a reward. So they count for eternity. It is remarkable. Now, I used to work for Orange for many years, and we were lucky enough to have a Christian union in Orange. And one of the leaders, she used to work as a missionary for Tear Fund in Africa. But then due to personal reasons, the family had to return to the UK. And in the UK, she worked for Orange as a project manager. But she was convinced that her work at Orange as a project manager was just as valuable to God as when she worked in Africa as a missionary for Tear Fund, because she did both roles for the Lord and in obedience to Him. So it's just another example, an illustration that whatever you do, work at it with all your heart as working for the Lord. Great, let's go on now to verse 26 in Ecclesiastes. It says, to the person who pleases him, God gives wisdom, knowledge, and happiness. But to the sinner, he gives the task of gathering and storing up wealth to hand it over to the one who pleases God. This too is meaningless and a chasing after the wind. So I guess the key question is, how can we please God? Well, a good start, I think, is given in Psalm 111, which says, Psalm 111, verse 10, the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. All who follow his precepts have good understanding. To him belongs eternal praise. So this verse shows that we should revere God, follow his word, and give him praise. And to the one that pleases God, he will give wisdom, knowledge, and happiness. And there's a huge contrast here between the one who pleases God and the sinner, because we've read that to the sinner, he gives the task of gathering and storing up wealth to hand it over to the one who pleases God. And there are biblical examples of God's people acquiring wealth from others. For example, when the Israelite slaves left Egypt, they asked the Egyptians for articles of silver and gold and clothing. We read about this in Exodus 12. So Exodus 12, verse 35, we read, the Israelites did as Moses instructed. They asked the Egyptians for articles of silver and gold and for clothing. The Lord had made the Egyptians favorably disposed toward the people, and they gave them what they asked for. So they plundered the Egyptians. And likewise, when the children of Israel, they crossed the wilderness and they entered the promised land, God gave them the promised land of which they did not toil, and he gave them cities they did not build. So we read about that in Joshua 24. Starting at verse 11, we see it's written that then you crossed the Jordan and you came to Jericho. The citizens of Jericho fought against you, as did the Amorites, Perizzites, Canaanites, Hittites, Girgashites, Hivites, and Jebusites. But I gave them into your hands. I sent the hornet ahead of you, which drove them out before you, also the two Amorite kings. You did not do it with your own sword and bow. So I gave you a land on which you did not toil, and cities you did not build, and you live in them and eat from vineyards and olive groves that you did not plant. But you know, even if sinners do not hand over their wealth during their lifetimes, they still have to leave it to someone else when they die. And who knows whether that person will be wise or foolish. So, looking back over the whole passage today, it seems we have a choice. We can toil ceaselessly looking for meaning in life without God, or we can get right with God through faith in the Lord Jesus and live wise, productive, and meaningful lives. So Solomon, one of the wisest men who ever lived, he wrote in Psalm 127, "Unless the Lord builds the house, the builders labor in vain. Unless the Lord watches over the city, the guards stand watch in vain." But let us finish with the words of Jesus, definitely the wisest person who ever lived. John 15, Jesus said, "I am the vine, you are the branches. If you remain in me and I in you, you will bear much fruit. Apart from me, you can do nothing." I don't want to labour or keep watch in vain. And apart from Jesus Christ, I would have lived my life and achieved nothing of eternal value. So let us be those who choose wisely and decide to follow Jesus. So as a final thought for this morning, why do you think it bothers the teacher so much that life under the sun is meaningless, a chasing after the wind? Why doesn't he simply accept his fate of having a pointless, futile, meaningless existence? Well, in the next chapter, in chapter 3, we'll see that God has set eternity in our hearts. That's Ecclesiastes 3, verse 11. We have been created by God to have a relationship with him, our Heavenly Father, and to spend eternity with him. Nothing else will truly satisfy our seeking hearts. Everything else is meaningless and a chasing after the wind. Well, I hope that gave you some food for thought. I certainly found it interesting preparing, and it's a really great book once you get into it, but it can obviously be a struggle, as Jeff was saying. So that was very grateful, Jeff, for the invitation to come and share that passage with you. And I'd like to close now by singing Jesus, All for Jesus.